here we go, the first question. Those outside will miss enlightenment. They are because they had a chance of getting enlightened, but they're outside talking or buying books. So sad. The first question. Okay, can you share more with us? What is a good death in Buddhist context? Thank you. The way to have a good death is to have a good life. Those who have a good life end up having a good death. A good death, they usually say, is when the last moment of thinking about something wholesome and good. That's why they always say the last thoughts are the most important. Which reminds me of a story from Sri Lanka. There was a businessman in Colombo who was what we call in Buddhism a Waisak Buddhist. I'm sure you have many Waisak Buddhists in Singapore too, and in Thailand especially. They only go to temple once a year on Waisak. That's what they call Waisak Buddhist. And this guy was a Waisak Buddhist. He'd only go to the temple because his wife would scold him. He never went once a year. So reluctantly, to avoid the wrath from his wife's tongue, he went to the temple once a year. And as he was in the temple on the way that day, he heard the monk talk about a good death. And he heard the monk say the most important thing is to think some good thoughts just as you pass away. And the best thoughts which you can have before you die is to think of the Buddha, the Dhamma and the Sangha, the Triple Gem. And the monk in his sermon said, if anyone thinks about the Buddha, Dhamma and Sangha when they die, they are guaranteed 100% a rebirth in heaven or back in the human realm in a very good life. So when he heard that, he thought, is that all you need to do to get reborn in heaven? Just make sure your last thought is about the Buddha, the Dhamma, the Sangha? Do you mean I don't have to go to the temple ever again and give donations to these fat monks and keep all these really terrible precepts which stop me having fun? And the priest said, yes, as long as you think of the Buddha, Dhamma, the Sangha before you die, you're guaranteed going to heaven. So he thought, great. I'm never going to go to the temple ever again. No more donations. No more listening to these boring sermons. Because once in Sri Lanka, they don't tell jokes. Only Western monks tell jokes. Well, not really. Some other monks tell jokes as well now. And he said, how can I make absolutely sure that my last thoughts will be about the Buddha, the Dhamma and the Sangha? And then he had this great insight. The 100% foolproof method of making sure your last thoughts are about the Buddha, Dhamma and Sangha. Because you see, he had three sons. And your sons are always there at your deathbed when you pass away. So as soon as he got home, he renamed his sons. The eldest son, he renamed Buddha. The second son, Dhamma. And the youngest one, Sangha. So his three sons were now called Buddha, Dhamma and Sangha. And he knew they would be with him at his deathbed, so he would always be thinking of Buddha, Dhamma and Sangha just as he died. That way he'd be bound to go to heaven. So instead of going to the temple, he just looked after his business at the shop all day. Because that's what he really loved, making money. And when he got old, when he got sick, when he was on his last sickness and on his deathbed, his plan was working out perfectly. There he was, maybe only an hour or two, maybe less to die. And his three sons were with him. He kept looking at them. Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha. I'm going to heaven. Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha. I'm going to heaven. And it was all going perfectly until He looked at his son, Buddha, who's here, Dhamma is here, Sangha is here, and goes, hey, hang on. If my three sons are here, who's looking after my shop? And that is the point when he died. It didn't work. You can't just say, I am going to live a shameless life, an ungenerous life, a bad life, and just be able to think of these things in the day. You just can't do that. So if you've lived a good life, you always have a good day. That's a wonderful thing to see. People have meditated, they can let go so easily. And they just relax. And just let death happen. They'll be so at peace. I'm going to go to heaven. It's a nice place to go. I don't have to go to work anymore. I don't have to answer people's questions anymore. No more having my photograph taken. Oh, I'm going to heaven. I'm dying. Bye-bye. You can let go. So that's why the best way of meditating is letting go. And when you learn how to let go, you die very peacefully. It must have been the first time I heard this. I've heard this very many times since. It was from a doctor. I think she was actually a Christian doctor who was working up in Taiping. In Malaysia. And I was in a car with her going up to Penang. And she was just talking to me. And she was really interested in Buddhist practice. She was basically becoming a Buddhist. And she said, in all my years of treating people who were dying, she said that the Buddhists die the best. They always die really peacefully. So the Christians and the Muslims, they usually struggle at the end. The Buddhists know how to let go and die peacefully. That made her very interested in Buddhism. And yet that's, anecdotally, that's so true. I've counseled many people on their deathbeds. Some are not Buddhists, some are, some have been Buddhists for a long time. All Buddhists who are meditating, especially, they die so peacefully. They just sit there and they let go, they no fear at all, and they die beautifully. The people who are afraid of death are usually those ones who believe they're going to be judged for final examination, hell forever, or heaven forever. That's a scary test. How many of you are that good, you've done nothing bad in your whole life, you're absolutely confident you won't go back down to hell? If you're a Christian, it's the most terrifying thing of all. Because no one is that perfect. But also no one is that bad either. That's one of the things I rejected, one of the reasons why I rejected that idea. There's no person who's ever lived who's that bad, they deserve to go to hell forever and ever and ever and ever. That idea of a permanent place of torture, that is so bad. If there was such a place, then God should face up to the International Tribunal of Human Rights. It's torture, you can't do things like that. That's really immoral. No one can ever accept sort of ultimate torture, even like ultimate heaven. No one is that good that you deserve to go to heaven forever, never, 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 never. That's why temporary heaven and temporary hell, and then rebirth again after, that's much more just. So that's why, one of the reasons why I rejected that seems to be a strange thing I do. But because you're a Buddhist, you can let go so easily, which means you can die so peacefully. Well, that's basically the way to have a good death, is to learn these teachings, to put them into practice. So when you do die, which eventually you will, you'll die so peacefully, so at ease, just like going on holiday. Are you tense when you go on holiday? Are you really relaxed? Well, no more work for the next few days. Just really relax and just chill out. People just like dying. No more work. I can relax and chill out. That's how you have a good day. Ajahn Brahm, is meditation supposed to be an intellectual activity? How do we get enlightened? By being still. When we investigate and experience self through meditation, are we not thinking, thus causing our mind to be unstill? Thank you for clarification. Indeed, if you start to analyze, investigate experiences during meditation, you're destroying your stillness. Just shut up. Be still. You know that that is part of Buddhism which has infiltrated the Christian Bible. It's in Psalms where it said, "Be still and know that thou art God." That's what it says in the Psalms. And I often quote that to my Christian friends. They say, "See, I'm just following your holy book." And that's actually what happens when you're really still, you get all the insights. You know that you are that creator. You make the world. That you are love. You are peace. When you're very still. Very powerful little teaching that you find in the weirdest of places. So, stillness is the path to insight, to peace, to happiness, to nirvana. In the Bible, it's the way to God. Be still and know that thou art God inside. But anyway, what that really means here is to understand something, because you think about it, that's why you never understand it. You think about it. This is a simile. So please contribute to this, because I'm going to get you involved. What is this I'm holding up? What is it? Cheryl, what else? What else can you tell me about this? Yeah, what else? What else? Yeah, what else? You call it okay. Now, this is an exercise in the way we try and understand things. I pick up something and you give it a name, cup. If I hadn't asked you to tell me more, you'd have thought you'd finished, that you know this is cup. And you've dealt with it. You think you've understood it. Because I asked you more questions, what else is it? You came up with other descriptions. You started seeing more. When you think something, that's a cup. That's husband. That's wife. That's mother. You assume that you've known it, and you go on to the next thing. That is a problem with investigation. When we give it a name, we think that's all it is. This is much, much more than a cup. A huge number of possibilities for this thing I'm holding up. Whatever it is, yeah. I'm going to put it down now for my afternoon. When you think you know it, that's when you've given it a name, you've described it, you've defined it through thought, and that means you stop looking. You can't see anymore. So real insight happens when you stop thinking. You never gain truth by thoughts. All you gain through thoughts is more labels, more descriptions, more boxes you try to put things into. Understanding is much, much deeper than that. Which is why one of my favorite similes is the simile of the professor who went to the 5-star restaurant. A new restaurant had opened up. He made a reservation. It was such a popular restaurant, he had to wait for 2 months to get a reservation. When the night came, he dressed up in a good suit, because these great restaurants have a very strict dress code. He turned up, they asked for his ID. They find out, "Yes sir, you have got a reservation tonight." So they led him to his table. And the internal decor of this restaurant was amazing. It was so well done. Chandeliers, beautiful mahogany tables. The artwork on the walls just fed into the whole ambience of this top restaurant. A waiter came dressed in tails and a beautiful bow tie. He was very well presented and gave the professor the menu. The menu was written on thick parchment, not like in this hotel, which is just a little wallet with the menu on. This was in really beautiful calligraphy, in gold lettering on thick parchment. So the professor thanked the waiter for the menu, and then the professor ate the menu and paid his bill and left. Because the professor didn't know the difference between the menu and the food. Now, cup, white, ceramic, tea, shaking, whatever, that's menu, that's not the food. That's why people are sometimes never get great insights. All they do is read menus. They don't taste the food. What's peace? The only way you know what peace is by tasting it. By tasting the food. But it's really amazing that so many people think they know what peace is, and they work for world peace. And they want peace of mind. They've got no clue what peace is. It's just a word. Just an item on the menu of life. They never tasted it because they don't really know what it is. And even amazing things, compassion, kindness. We all think we know what compassion and kindness is. But for many it's just a word. Rather than something which we eat and we know the taste of. That's actually how you understand what kindness and compassion is. That's what insight is. The experience of insight, not the thought of insight. So this is not an intellectual exercise. Not at all. If anything, it's an emotional exercise. An intuition exercise. An exercise of getting that deeper layer of knowledge, which is clear seeing, insight. Knowing what peace is. And the intellect then describes it with words to other people. The knowledge comes before. That's why you don't have to have a university degree to become enlightened. In fact, people who do, like me, usually have a hard time. Keep it simple. Keep it peaceful. People are close to their emotions, understand emotions. They may not be able to describe them, but they understand them. So this is an emotional journey. And peace, inspiration, joy, ecstasy, freedom. Even freedom is an emotion. You feel it. That's what freedom is. You start thinking about it, and you end up doing all these treatises on human rights and fighting other people for human rights. We finding balance in a hurried world. Imagine, well, we are living in the country, working life rather than demanding, multitasking, meeting tight schedules. They've made many of us very stressful. How to overcome this? How to overcome this if you've got... This is actually a teaching of Venerable Thich Nhat Hanh. He said, if there's not much time, therefore we have to go slowly. We love you, Jesus. If there's not much time, you have to walk slowly. The reason is because if you run fast, you're liable to trip over and make a mistake. And you can't afford to make mistakes because there's not much time. So walking slowly means you make less mistakes. You make better use of the limited time you have. So that's why if things are rather demanding, multitasking, meeting tight schedules, go more slowly. You find you get more done. Counterintuitive, but you give it a try. It's amazing how well it works. So that's something for you to experiment. What happens to a person's consciousness when a person is declared brain dead? You know, someone once said, I was brain dead. They're telling bad jokes. What happens to a person's consciousness when a person is declared brain dead? Has a person passed under her rebirth? I have a friend who has been said to be brain dead for 12 years. She's been looked after at her home. Look, the brain is not you. That's only part of this body. And if anybody wants to see the evidence, Professor Pim Pham Lomong was the expert. He was a guy who found out that people have these near-death experiences only when their brain dead. When their brain stops functioning. And then they leave the body and are fully conscious only when the brain stops working. When you flatline. And so much evidence has been gathered about this, but that's actually when, you know, your mind takes over. Yeah, your brain ain't working, it's dead, but the mind takes over. Usually this mind, it usually is lazy enough, he just goes through the brain. Except in such cases as meditation and hypnosis. Those seem to be the two usual cases where you access the mind directly rather than going through the brain. Which is why that what you can recall under hypnosis and meditation is far more than your brain can ever recall. That's why in this hypnosis you can remember just what you did when you were a kid. With clear memory. You never be able to remember that in your brain, but your mind can. That's why people can remember past lives through meditation or hypnosis, where there's no possibility your brain can store that knowledge because it wasn't there at the time. Your mind was. That's why this mind is an incredibly amazing thing. You access it, it seems to be through those two ways. Meditation is the best way because many people can't be hypnotized, they just won't let themselves be put into a trance. But everyone can meditate. But when a person's in a coma, when the doctors say they're brain dead, don't think they're mind dead. They may very well be able to hear you, feel you, and see you. Which is why, if that's your mother or father or friend in a coma in hospital, hold their hand, talk to them, tell them the latest news. If they want to find out what's happening in the stock market, just tell them the latest reports. If that's what interests them, then let them know, because sometimes you know what it's like? We're dying to know, we're dying to know, you know, who won the FA Cup. And you know, you're going to come and ask, darling, you know, who won? So whatever they're interested in, tell them the latest news and gossip. And they'll love you for that. And keep talking to them, because a lot of times they can hear you, but you can't hear them. That's what sometimes happens. Well, I said, so even if they've been brain dead for 12 years, sometimes that they're still alive. So talk to them. Let them know what's happening. Sometimes they can understand. And sometimes they come back again afterwards and say, yes, I could hear everything you said. Oh, but the question comes sometimes, here they've been brain dead for 12 years, is it time to turn off the machine and kill your mother or kill your father? And as a Buddhist, that's supposed to be one of the worst karmic acts you could possibly do. Terminate your parents' life. That's called, in the same league as drawing the Buddha's blood, creating a schism, killing an arahant. It's one of the heinous crimes in Buddhism. So people get very scared. That's my father, and I'm the eldest son, and I've got to make a decision as to turn off the life support. But I'm killing my father, that means I'm really in big trouble karmically. What should I do? But if I keep the machine on, that's costing the whole family such a lot of money. And look, he's taking up a bed which could be used for other people. He's not going to survive. What should I do? And many of you have heard me say the answer before, and it works. If that's your mother or father in a coma, on life support in hospital, the doctor says there's no possibility of recovery, you sit down next to your, say, your mother, hold her hand, and ask me, Mom, do you want to die? Do you want to go? Or do you want to carry on? Ask that question. Be silent and listen. You won't hear a voice in your head, but you'll feel the answer in your heart. That's your mother, your father there. You can communicate on that level. And you'll feel the answer very clearly. And maybe the mother says, no, don't turn it off, I'm still here, I'm still fighting. Often you hear in your heart, is that enough? Well, often this is already gone. It's just an empty shell. And then if you tell the doctor, turn the machine on, you're not killing your mother, you're not killing your father, you're conveying her wishes, or his wishes, to the doctor. It's not your bad karma. You're conveying your father's wishes. That's all. So that gets you off the hook. You don't have to do the bad karmic consequence which the Buddha says if you kill your father or mother. And also, you're being kind and skeptical. Ask your father, ask your mother what to do. And it always works. Yes.
friend of mine, her father just died of cancer, but she didn't ask the doctor to stop using the life support system because from the very beginning, the doctor asked whether she would like to use it, and she said no from the very beginning.
Yeah.
So was it okay?
Of course it was okay. It's your choice.
I mean, for her father.
My father, yeah. Just no, just waste of time trying to keep me going for such a long time. Just care for me, don't kill me. Stay with me. If you are going to hospital for something, please don't try and keep me alive. We've got so many talks already on the internet and on tapes. You know, I can keep going for years. So let me go. If I go into hospital, you know, for say, you know, a little operation or something, you know, because the, you know, heel and toe or something, because I'm on a sign of form, so I don't want to be resuscitated on the toe operation. You know, I do that. But I think it's good to let things go. How can one continue to practice the Dharma, meditate when the body brain finally gives way to Alzheimer's disease and goes into coma, etc.? That's amazing. This is really weird that sometimes you get the same questions come one after another. The law of attraction. You seek it. No, it's not that. So yeah, again, if you have Alzheimer's disease, this is an interesting thing to see in people who meditate and get Alzheimer's disease. This is a great area for people to study because it seems to me that people who meditate will not get Alzheimer's disease. Simply because you're practicing mindfulness, and mindfulness is the opposite of forgetfulness. So those who do meditate will have far less incidence of Alzheimer's. But that's got to be proven because only recently have so many people from so many different cultures to be meditating. Now they can actually have a base to do that research. But I think it's pretty possible, if not probable, that the meditation will avoid Alzheimer's disease. The other thing which is stops Alzheimer's disease, I read this in a scientific journal a long time ago, is smoking cigarettes. Because this was actually research which was published, you know, by the tobacco industry, of course. They made a very strong correlation. People who smoke cigarettes do not suffer Alzheimer's disease. It is actually very, very clear. Until someone pointed out the reason. The reason why the people who smoke don't have much incidence of Alzheimer's is because people who smoke don't live long enough to get Alzheimer's disease. That's why you don't see many smokers with Alzheimer's. So, when you have Alzheimer's disease, it's like you're in a fog. You know, like it's sometimes summer, you get up early in the morning, you meditate, you're in a fog. So that's like last few years, that's what Alzheimer's is like. Like it's lost and talk a big time, for a long time, but eventually you come out of it. And this is the amazing thing, so many people come out of Alzheimer's disease at the very end. It's a very common experience. I tried to check about my mother who had Alzheimer's and died last February, but didn't seem to happen to her, but maybe no one was around when it happened, she died in the middle of the night. But apparently many times people haven't recognized anybody for years. And then suddenly they come clear, they can recognize everybody, their memory is restored and they die a minute or two later. And just before they die, since their mind separates from their brain, the brain is stuck, it's hopeless, it's got Alzheimer's. And your mind can remember everything. Which is really interesting. Okay, I think that's enough questions for now. The other questions we'll do tonight, because now we can actually do some meditation. So if you'd like to, like me, I'm going to stand up and I'm going to stretch my bones. I'm getting very old now. Sorry, because I never smoke, that's why. Somebody actually asked that question to us. Where was it? Very recently. Can monks smoke? And I said, only when they're being cremated.
Okay.
Sitting here. Remember, just as if you're having to do an examination. You've been busy all morning. You've got a lot of things coming up afterwards. And you can prepare your mind right now. First of all, you feel how you're sitting when your eyes are closed. And you're so sensitive to the body. You find where you are in your good position. People are sometimes asking you, should your left hand be on your right hand be on the left hand, in your lap or on your knees or on your head, or where the heck should you put your hands? It doesn't matter, let your hands decide where they want to be. As long as they're comfortable, that's good. As long as your back is comfortable, shoulders, your arms, your head, that's where mindfulness gives you feedback. And mindfulness tells you how to arrange your body. So you notice from that feedback that this is in the most comfortable position. Sometimes you don't have much time. You've only got 15 minutes for this meditation, so please make every minute count. No need to think about things. So let go of the body. If you need to let go of the past, like I have to let go of that morning exam. Past is finished, the papers are in, you can't change the past. It's not the right time for analysing the past. Faith is all gone. As for the future, what's happening later on? Not the time to worry about the future. That makes your mind and body weak. The best way to prepare for your future is by being in the present moment, in the place where your future is being made. Jesus, you know, and after that, and again in the front of that, come after meditation. In the lobby, we have vitamin C, vitamin T for the expert. Vitamin coffee, vitamin tea. Is there an announcement? Okay. A very cool, we have the tea, right? We have announcements.
So be precise and precise with your questions so more people can benefit from Ajahn Brahm's wisdom. But we are not extending his time either because Ajahn Brahm, strangely, he's human, so he does need a bit of rest. And he's getting older, you know. It's a strange thing that we're all aging, isn't it? Yeah, anyway. So enjoy your coffee, tea, and see you later.
Thank you.
Thank you.